Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus. You have accessed entry 1225.mk0608, certificate number 13472. Stickball!
Now, we were largely indoor kids.
Yeah, I mean, you more than me.
You think?
Well, because when I was a young kid, it was kick 'em out of the house era.
Well, that's what I had. I was an indoor kid by nature who had a mom who thought it was not salubrious to spend a day inside.
By nature, I think I would have stayed inside.
Childcraft.
You're right. But it was necessary that we be outside, and so...
Were you given a time? I was often given a time. You guys have to leave the apartment for an hour. Run around.
No, because we lived in suburbia, so it was much more like... much more of that sort of come back at dinner time thing. But also my mom worked full time.
Yeah.
So she didn't get home until dinner time, 6 p.m.
She could not make you schwinn around the neighborhood all day, but maybe you did anyway.
Well, because what we had was a babysitter who was watching game shows and smoking Virginia Slims. And so being in her house was worse even than being out in the rain. So we...
No, the game shows are good, to be clear.
Yeah, no, the game shows are incredible.
It's just the Virginia Slims that made you want to go into the rain.
But then my dad worked full-time too. And when I went to live with him, even though it was Alaska and bitterly cold half of the time, it also felt like, well, I could be inside building my own fireworks, or I could be outside setting off my own fireworks. And one of those is obviously more fun than the other. So, yeah, it's not like today where you have games and computers where you can just stay inside all the time. You and I would get tired of reading the encyclopedia.
That's the big change.
It's a lot to take
inside in. Inside got so much better. I was into inside before it was cool, though, honestly.
You were.
When I was inside, there was no cable TV.
No.
There were no video games. And I still knew it was better.
Yeah, no, that's the other thing, right? No TV. Because daytime TV was the worst TV.
It was for moms.
And then no games. And there was no game you could play by yourself.
Inside stuff was almost inside was so bad that inside stuff was a punishment. It would be like, well, it's a rainy day. Go see if we have all the pieces to Monopoly or Sorry. Yeah. You know, you had all these consolation prize inside stuff.
Being sent to your room sucked. Whereas now, I mean, even when I send my daughter to her room, she's like, oh, you mean my room that has 900 graphic novels?
That's where all my stuff is.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this as I was thinking about stickball and other kinds of urban American street games. I realized I had a big city childhood. I just wasn't right. I wasn't in the Bowery of, I wasn't in Brooklyn.
Right.
I was in South
Seoul,
Korea.
Which is pretty impressive.
But it was kids running around, you know, apartment playgrounds and, you know, whatever, parking lots and tennis courts. And
did you venture out into the city?
Well, yeah. I mean,
you and your brother, did you like
the subway got good and mm-hmm. we would certainly run around our neighborhood. You know, we would go down to the store that had the ice creams we like, or the store that had the funny stationery, or,
but you weren't in a protective enclave. You were in the city.
No green zone. And the fact is there weren't a lot of like neighborhood Korean kids that wanted to play with the like the two white kids in the building.
Right.
So there wasn't a ton of that. But there were usually some expat kids nearby. And you know, you'd be playing on the, you know, you'd be doing parallel play at these same playgrounds with a you know, just local population.
When you were out running around and you saw another white kid that was your age, was there a natural sort of go over and sniff each other and say, what the hell are you doing here?
Yes. It was funny because a lot of those expat zones where you would see another white face, they would just be military kids.
Yeah.
And there was nothing I, as a dainty, you know, private school kid, wanted less than to hang out with one of these rough and tumble military school, you know, Dodds school kids.
Right.
In hindsight, I'm sure they were lovely. And it wasn't even a class thing. It was really just like, these are like the...
But weren't
these
the real Americans kids? Wouldn't like enlisted kids be educated on the base? They wouldn't
be.
Not
a lot of enlisted people would be there on accompanied tours with their kids anyway.
Oh.
So yeah, if they were living, you know, near but off the base, they were likely officers, or they could be adjacent, you know, they could be embassy or they could be intelligence or...
Right.
But often if you had enough kids, there was not a lot of housing for you, so you got stuck somewhere else. And so I guess I do have a lot of memories of like, you know, not playing...
You weren't running around the forest.
I wasn't playing, but you know, I wasn't doing a movie version of a child street fun. I wasn't playing box ball, Johnny on the fly, steal the bacon.
You didn't open fire hydrants and run around?
Exactly. That kind of idyllic Sesame Street view of double dutch jump rope and opening up fire hydrants, you know?
Yeah.
Like I didn't have that, but I did have lots of, you know, kind of the equivalent of these kids, you know, building forts out of trash in the Bronx. We would totally do stuff like that. I remember finding an inner tube once in a parking lot and realizing like you could kind of throw it, like it would really carry like a Frisbee.
Yeah.
You know, you could stand 400 feet away and just kind of huck that thing. And we did that for hours till our arms hurt, which is kind of like a Sesame Street urban childhood thing. It didn't feel like suburbia with bikes.
No, mine was entirely a Schwinn Stingray, big wheel economy. But we had giant forests all around us. So the fir forests of the Northwest, where you could go build any number of forts, and it felt like there were big feet all around you. And then in Alaska, you only have to go two blocks and you're in a place where there might be wolves. So there was a lot of time just spent in the woods.
So you could have adventure, but it would be jungle, not urban jungle. Like it would be real.
Yeah, right. I mean, you could fall into a creek. You could, you could get hurt, but in a nature context, not hurt by a person, but by a log falling on you.
But like me, you did have that Gen X experience of seeing these amazing,
oh my God,
urban childhoods.
Because all of public television was devoted to making urban kids feel seen.
If we had been 5 years older, we never would have seen that stuff.
Right. That was all a late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah, it was like a 1970 era. You know, we're tired of just seeing these lily white Eisenhower suburban kids on Romper Room. Let's actually show what a bunch of childhoods are like.
Yeah.
And so you and I got to see, and it wasn't just
public housing childhoods.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just Sesame Street, but that was a big part of it. But, you know, it became, you know, in Rocky, he plays stickball with a bunch of kids.
Right.
And,
I mean, it's kind of a West Side Story.
Yeah.
Like but I do feel like it was
Bowery Boys.
It was somewhat of a social engineering idea where it was like, oh, yeah, suburban kids get plenty of attention and we're going to develop public television.
Right.
To supplant the failing schools of the inner city.
An 8-year-old in Seattle wouldn't have seen it until the 70s. But I was realizing I did kind of imbibe this idea of what that kind of rough and tumble childhood was like, just because a lot of those guys grew up to like make the American comic book, you know, like,
oh, sure,
Jack Kirby and Stan Lee. And so we still know about that era because, you know, the Captain America movie made $500 million, and that's all about that kind of Brooklyn or Queens scrappy street kid kind of a childhood.
Right.
You know, none of our, you know, none of our kids have ever seen a Bowery Boys movie, but they understand that because comic books gave that Northeastern urban childhood a real shelf life.
For me, I think also, I mean, Sesame Street laid the groundwork, but then Welcome Back, Kotter.
Yeah.
And a lot of those cop shows and sitcoms, you know, Happy Days was suburban, but Welcome Back, Kotter and Barney Miller were taking place in these, you know, in basically in New York City in decline. And so you really got a sense of like, oh, there are all these, you know, there are these Puerto Rican kids and black kids and Jewish kids, and they're all poor, but they have a lot of wisdom, street wisdom that I lack. I mean, I can put a chain on a Schwinn, but can I take the subway? Can I ride on the roof of a subway? No, I can't.
Were those kids taking Mr. Kotter on the roof of a subway?
Well, no, but you got the sense that they were out, you know, that they were the kids that were hopping between subway cars, which the sign strictly prohibited.
Were you aware of stickball existing? The idea of kind of a simplified pickup street baseball?
Yeah, also from movies.
Billy Joel says in Keeping the Faith, I learned stickball as a formal education.
We all actually had baseball mitts,
right,
and baseballs and baseball bats.
And space, right?
Yes.
Like you could find a school soccer field or a community baseball diamond where there'd be lots of room to play baseball.
Because that also was a period in post-war America where they put baseball diamonds and soccer fields all across suburban America.
The thing to understand about the stickball story is it happens at a time when this is the dominant form of American recreation. Like football and basketball are footnotes compared to the cultural dominance of baseball. And, you know, all these bat and ball sports, they go back to the Tudor era. I'm going to go to great lengths to not talk about cricket.
Come on.
In this entry.
People love it when we talk about cricket on this show.
Let me talk a little more accurately and, you know, harder to catch my mistakes about a sport called stool ball. like stool as in sitting on a stool.
Oh, I see. I thought it was that you shape balls out of your...
And stool samples?
Your poop.
Stool balls attested all the way back to 1450. It's a rural practice in kind of the southeast of England, Kent, Sussex, Surrey. It seems to be a kind of a... I mean, it's related to these ball and stick sports like cricket and rounders. But it seems to have started out as an Easter, like a springtime courtship ritual.
Uh-huh. There was only one stool in town, and the one to sit on it was the most eligible bachelor.
Yeah, if there's already a fair lass in the stool, you get to sit on her, I guess. No, it was the stool is because it was largely played with like dairy made implements.
Okay.
Like the stool you would sit on to milk a cow.
The bucket.
The bowl or the biddle. It was often called biddle battle because you would use the biddle, the milk bowl, as a bat. It seems to have started out as kind of a dodgeball thing where boys and girls are chucking balls at each other and you're trying to bat it away before it hits the stool. Like you set the seat of a stool up in a tree or a post behind you. That's effectively the backstop.
It's cricket.
Or the wicket to a cricket fan. And you're trying to knock that out while your sweetheart or your buddy is trying to knock it out of the air dodgeball style.
So it's like capture the flag except with a ball, and you're not capturing it.
You're not capturing it. You're just trying to knock it down. Cricket is a sport of destruction.
Right.
In America, we have sports of creation. We build things in this country, John.
We built this city on rock and roll.
But because it was played between, I guess the idea is this is a thing that boys and girls can do together.
Mm-hmm.
That's physical, but it's wholesome and sunlit, and nobody's going to touch anybody else's genitals. You know, it's an approved way for boys and girls to interact. So,
have you ever milked a cow?
Never. Is it very sensual?
It's pretty great, but I bet you if you had to do it every day, you'd be ready to
for a break.
Put your bicket down and play a game.
Pick your biddle back up.
Pick your biddle up.
And use it to knock a ball aside before it hits the stool.
Now, that's a phrase. That's a coinage that has been lost. Pick your biddle up.
Pick your biddle up.
I'm going to start saying that.
That could come back.
Hey, get your biddle up.
What does it mean to you?
Let's get busy. Let's get into action.
But in a romantic way, or is it like, let's get this party started?
Not in a romantic way. I have less and less reason to ever say anything like that anymore.
Hey, baby, pick your bit. Are you still up? Pick your biddle up and
pick your biddle up and get over here. It's not going to work.
Shakespeare mentions Stewball in Two Noble Kinsmen, where he actually uses it as a metaphor for making whoopee. He's like, are those two playing Stewball? If you know what I mean.
Is there anything Shakespeare couldn't turn into a metaphor?
Dirty-minded
weirdo.
That's
really how he is.
Dirty-minded guy.
Yeah.
He saw two people playing an innocent pastime in a field and was like, hey.
Turned it into a sexy bit.
I know what's going on. Here's a 1694 verse. 1694. Here's like a 330-year-old take on Stewball. Down in the vale on a summer's day, all the lads and lasses meet to be merry. A match for lasses at Stewball to play, and for cakes and ale and cider and Perry. I had to look up Perry. You know what Perry is?
Is it from fencing?
No, it's P-E. It's spelled like Perry Mason. P-E-R-R-Y.
No, what is Perry?
I guess cider is to apples as Perry is to pears.
Oh.
If you make a fermented pear juice drink.
Sure.
That's Perry.
So it's about getting drunk and make a whoopee in this.
Yeah, but it's interesting that the lasses are playing at Stewball. And this appeared to be the rare example of a sport that was largely for women. I guess maybe because they were the dairymaids. They had access to all the stools and all the biddles.
Right.
And it was, you know, it was. I've kind of expressed that because the stool is in a tree, the main difference between cricket and Stewball would have been that the ball stays in the air.
It's basketball.
The ball does not bounce in the bowler, kind of. But it's almost like baseball because the ball is going to hit the backstop. It's going to get to the equivalent of your batsman, your bowl or bowl wielding milkmaid, before it bounces on the ground.
What's the ball made of?
Back then, I mean, what would have been tightly wrapped rags?
Poop.
Yeah, that's why it's called stool ball.
Yeah, rags around a piece of poop.
Because back then there was poop didn't even smell bad. People were just like, if everything smells like poop, then nothing does.
Are you saying that the odor of poop is a modern problem? And then the old days, it just smelled like strawberries?
No, it always smelled like poop. It's just that if everything smells like poop, you don't mind if you're throwing around a ball of it. Oh,
good point.
You know?
I see.
Because it's going to smell like poop here in this dairy, in this cow meadow.
Sure.
Even if I'm not throwing it. What if they were using cow pies for their stool ball balls?
I bet you it is a thing.
But because it started out with dairymaids, this really became one of the few, when this start in the Victorian era, became an organized sport, cricket in the air, as it was called, this kind of informal pickup cricket game. It was played by women, and local towns would field all the woman teams, and they would become, I mean, regional celebrities. If you lived in Kent or Sussex and Surrey in the 19th century, you might go cheer for your village's women's stool ball team. But as a pickup game, it crossed the ocean to colonial Boston in the 17th and 18th centuries.
Just like rats and syphilis.
Right. Those are the three things that came over.
Stoolball, rats.
Rats, syphilis, and weird bat and ball games. And those are the three things that shaped the American mind.
Sure. The three things that England is most famous for exporting and the three things that make Boston what it is today.
What do Americans think about? Baseball and not getting STDs.
Right. And rats.
That's why they were such Puritans. It had nothing to do with religion.
Oh, sure.
It was just like, stop sending all that syphilis. Like, we've come like 2,000 miles to get away from the syphilis.
Yeah, now look at us.
And the syphilis just keeps coming. So in the Northeast, these newly formed cities, Boston, Philadelphia, New York, would have this culture of playing these pickup bat and ball games inherited from stool ball. But increasingly, as cities grow up, a grassy sward becomes harder to come by.
Right.
You want a good sward.
Yeah, you do, even now.
I mean, what's your favorite kind of sward? Grassy, right?
Grassy, grassy.
I mean, Seattle is full of swards that have been turned into dog parks, and now all the grass is gone.
I mean, one of the crap things about Manhattan is that in the old days, it was either swamp or rocky rocks. There wasn't that. I mean, there were swards, but not a ton.
Nary a sward to offend the eye. And so as cities grow up,
mm-hmm.
buildings get taller, buildings get closer together, more and more kids living tighter and tighter together, not a lot of big places for them to play like meadow-based games. And so stool ball had to adjust.
That's how evolution works.
That's how sports evolve.
Uh-huh.
Do you think sports evolve faster than species?
Well, let's see. Think of all the sports that have different shaped beaks.
I mean, the designated hitter rule only took 30 years, whereas, yeah, a Darwin finch, it's going to take thousands of years to get slightly bigger beak or darker feathers.
Can you tell me what a balk is? What's a balk?
Balks have changed since I was a kid.
Yeah.
So that's evolving. And it's really a pornography, like you know it when you see it.
Yeah, okay. Kind You're like, oh, that's a balk.
Kind of, yeah.
Where's Rhodesia?
There's no Rhodesia. I feel like when I first learned the balk rules, there was Rhodesia.
Yeah, that's probably true.
And I'm not nostalgic, by the way. For Ian Smith ruling a majority black population.
You're against Rhodesia and... How do you feel about the old balk versus the new balk?
I'm for the designated hitter rule, and I'm for the... I'm not for the ghost runner, actually. I'm against the ghost runner. I'm for the pitch clock. I believe John F. Kennedy acted alone.
How do you feel about the Pac-12?
That's sad. I think it's just sad. Why should there be one big, good football conference?
There shouldn't.
There shouldn't.
Boo.
Spread the wealth.
Our Australian and English listeners, and
they tuned out long ago.
What?
But they were
are
what,
you talking?
They were probably
about?
Way angrier when we were talking about cricket than when we're talking about baseball.
No, they get excited when we talk about cricket because they want to yell at us about it. Ken, we encourage people to support the show by joining our Patreon, and our Patreon offers a lot of benefits above and beyond just the good feeling
that comes with supporting great art.
Supporting great art. Can you tell us some of the benefits of supporting our Patreon?
Well, there are multiple tiers. You know, historically, for contributing $5 a month, you get a bonus episode, kind of our best perk at the lowest level, an addenda show.
An addenda show every month where we answer reader mail.
If you give $10 a month, you get that, and you get access to the Patreon feed where we put up photos of show notes and the weird things people send us and a renewed commitment to post other kind of visual stuff. John and I were just talking about this.
Yeah, we're going to start posting a lot more photographs
nude
and candid shots of us at the beach.
At the $20 level, you get signed show notes.
Actual physical notes sent to your home.
Once a year, we'll send you signed notes from one of the shows we recorded. If there's ever a shortage in subsequent years, you might get assigned something else weird. We've been sending out chick tracts to a lot of repeat donors.
You can absolutely request certain shows if we still have them available. Right?
And at the $50 level, that's the Washing Bear tier. This year, you get a cool exclusive Washing Bear t-shirt. In future years, that tier name will change and a different organism will appear on your shirt of the year.
Sentient clams.
Yeah, it'll always be a mollusk, of course.
Sure.
It'll always be seafood. And the $100 level, John and I record you a fun, cool video message. We can take requests for that. But the reason why we're recording this whole spiel is because we have just bulked up, you might have heard, our introductory $5 tier. It was already the best tier because it had the addenda show.
Well, every tier gets everything that's on the $5.
Oh, yeah,
tier.
I forgot to keep doing that. It's a 12 Days of Christmas scenario.
That's right.
Not only do you get 11 Lords of Leaping, you get 5 Golden Rings.
And 4 Calling Birds.
And a Partridge in a Pear Tree. So all the tiers, but even the lowly $5 folks, the humblest widow's mite donors, scraping together $5
a month. Our homeboys and girls, our home bros...
They will also receive, going forward, VIP access to each new omnibus entry.
That's right.
What does that mean, John?
It means that you will get the show 2 days prior to when it airs to the hoi polloi.
Drops on Thursday for the regulars, drops it Tuesday for you.
Tuesday for $5 donors or above. And also, it will be ad-free. No advertisements. You don't have to fast forward through Ken's and my hair replacement ads and mattress shilling.
You can still, now if you love that stuff, if you're like, I don't want to miss out on the new advances in buckwheat sleepwear.
Right.
That, you can still listen to that on Thursday when the new show drops.
That's right.
But you will have the option to opt out of the ads you don't like.
And total bragging rights. You can go on the internet and just start spoiling the whole episode. You can say, haha, they don't get to the topic until 40 minutes in.
Hey, Thursday people, I know who the killer is.
Lol. And there's nothing they can do to stop you.
No, Thursday people are powerless.
Yeah.
They could have become Patreon supporters.
And we don't want to just start calling all the like the shirkers, Thursday people. But that might actually turn into a global coinage. It might become a meme.
Instead of like, freeloader?
Oh, what's up, Thursday people?
Like you give a bad tip at a restaurant and the server will be like, look at this Thursday guy.
What the hell, Thursday people? You know, why don't you try and be a Tuesday people for once?
Be a little bit Tuesday. You're a Thursday person in a Tuesday world, man.
That's the thing. Gen Z's
are off. They're going to be like, you get a bad tip and somebody's going to be like, it's giving Thursday.
Yeah, or they might even be, you know what they'll do? They'll say, that's so Thursday. Why don't you be twos?
Thirds. So go to patreon.com/omnibusproject and become a better person, a Tuesday person, if you will.
Yeah, that's right. Be a twos, not a thurs.
As rounders and cricket turn into baseball in America, you need an urban version that works in tight quarters. And, you know, like stool ball, it's a pickup sport.
Now you're making innuendos.
I didn't mean to. What did I say?
I don't know.
What would Shakespeare have said? And you're dealing with working class kids that don't have gloves and mitts and spikes, much less big fields to play on.
Or milk buckets, bindles, bickles.
I mean, they have the equivalent of bittles and bundles and stools, but it's got to be stuff they can hijack from their mom's broom closet.
Right.
And so the stick is usually a broom handle.
Right.
You can liberate that from its, they're cheap. You can replace them quickly at Mr. Moricelli's corner store, or you can steal your mom's and maybe she won't notice if it's not sweeping day.
And the bickle is made up of sewing baskets or what?
The ball is usually a Spalding.
Is that where that comes from, Spalding?
Well, it's because it's the other way around. They were made by Spalding, and so these inner rubber cores of their tennis balls were called Spaldings.
Oh.
By kids that just wanted the cheaper inner bouncy ones.
Right.
I almost think they would be getting their hands on cheap factory seconds or something.
Yeah, just rubber balls, rubber baby buggy bumpers.
Yeah, you can picture those pink, cheap rubber balls.
Sure, I picture them like they're the back of my hand.
But I think they started out as unfinished, as the core of a tennis ball, basically.
Or a tennis ball, that had the cover knocked off of it.
And then what's the target behind the batter? I think it depends on where you are, you know? If you are lucky enough to have a parking lot or a schoolyard, then you could actually maybe find a wall where you can use chalk to draw a strike zone, basically.
Right.
You know, you can draw a square on your backstop.
You could get Julio to do it because you and he would be...
You'd be down by the...
Yeah, you'd be down there already.
What do you think they were doing?
Playing stickball.
They were just... But why would the radical priest come to get them released if they were just playing stickball?
Oh, he and Julio were in detention, I bet.
Was something scandalous happening?
Yeah. That's the whole story of that song.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. But it seems like kind of a Shaggy Dog joke where even Paul Simon doesn't really know or care what happened.
Well, he was degenerate.
Just to bring this back, I think there's an early Sesame Street where it's just like, you know, a leisurely paced, as you and I have said, leisurely paced Sesame Street where Paul Simon and some kids are singing like an extended version of Me and Julio Down by the Schoolyard.
It's all about the alphabet?
No, I think he keeps the lyrics.
Whoa.
It's just, you know, in between verses, the kids are, you know, he's still singing about
their mama looked down, spit on the ground, and they're all
la, 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 like the cover of Newsweek. But in between, these kids are, they're making it for kids by, they're making it kids boppy by having the kids go, la, yeah, 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 for interminably between verses.
And your papa said, when I get that boy, I'm going to put him in the house of detention.
Stick him in the house of detention. Would you?
And then he's on his way.
Could the papa really stick you in the house of detention? I mean, a judge could.
No, I think back then you could.
You just had a shack out back?
Well, no, you could say, this boy has.
He's a reprobate.
He's made my daughter stay out late. And so he's take him away. He's a greasier.
Well, is there a queer reading where me and Julio, like if the singer is male and me and Julio are both guys, is there a gay liberation reading to Me and Julio Down by the Schoolyard?
I don't think so. Although it is after Stonewall, but I don't think of Paul Simon as being like a gay liberation hero.
Quite the opposite, in fact.
I don't know.
I don't know either. But if you, so if you have, and if you have a big schoolyard, you've got, you know, you've got a bigger field. You can actually do fast pitch to allow for the ball to carry faster.
Right, right.
But more often a game like stickball is being played on streets or in a back alley where you've got a much narrower field of play. And that means what you probably want to do is have the game slow pitch, maybe even with a bounce so that, you know,
with a bounce,
that's stickball is commonly played like cricket with a bounce.
That's against nature.
Really?
Well, for Americans.
I feel like in stickball, it's cooler.
I'm thinking about, have I played a ball game with a bounce? And I feel like, yes. Oh, is it kickball?
Kickball will have it'll have a bunch of bounces because it'll come dribbling to you. Bump, 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 bump.
Bump, 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 bump. That's the signature sound of kickball.
And then pew. A lot of stickball variants are fungo. They're kind of self-pitch. You toss the ball to yourself.
Yeah, okay.
But often a lot of those, I've never seen this. You know, when I play fungo baseball with the kids, I'm always just tossing it and hitting it out of the air.
Fungo? Well, I've never heard that term.
Well, it's the lightweight bat, but it's also the self-toss.
Oh, it's a kind of game.
Yeah. Fungo. But with a rubber ball, I think you can fungo it and then bounce and then hit it. Or you can bounce, or you can hit it on the way up or the way down. You know, you got a lot of fungo options.
Right.
This room, and then, so then you just set up the alley to make it a dual ball or baseball style pitch. But you have to deal with whatever the local geography is. You know, first base might be that manhole cover or hydrant. You know, second base might be a telephone pole or an abandoned car or, well, this, you know, is depending on how in decline New York is at the time.
This is how I learned to play golf was on my college campus. I had never played golf. I understood the mechanics of it. You know, I lived in the dorm.
Gonzaga?
At Gonzaga where Bing Crosby lived.
Not at the same time.
Not at the same time. And he was a famous golfer.
Hey, John. How's it going?
And so we would go out and kind of set up a golf course that was like, okay, the first hole is the, you know, the administration building. And the second hole.
You'd be using actual clubs?
Actual clubs. And then we would play this until we hit and broke a window.
Hey, I have a story of doing this with Frisbees.
How do you break a window with a frisbee?
Cool kids. I think our target was a statue that had some glass panels in it.
Uh-huh.
And somebody threw it a little too hard.
That's cool. I like that. That's
I feel like we just ran also.
That's some rebel stuff. We also ran because we'd end up down by the baseball field, and then we're tying this back together, bringing it back around. And there were always cars parked there by the baseball field, and we would always end up breaking a car windshield, which now seems really delinquent. But at the time, it was just one more in a long list of antisocial things we were doing.
Well, when you read about these, the stickball culture, it is a society that will put up with a lot more broken windows,
right,
than we will today. And even kind of laugh. I mean, there's a lot of moms getting mad because you stole a mop from a clothesline and used that for your bat or whatever. Building superintendents getting mad.
And she came out and shook her frying pan at the kids or whatever.
Immigrant mom with a frying pan. Uh-huh. But, you know, it's very narrow. You know, the foul lines are basically the sidewalk curbs of whatever street you're playing on. And the teams can be smaller, you know, because the field's not, it's not a wide diamond. Or even a cricket pitch where there's fielders out to the boundary. So teams might have as few as 3 to 8 players. The rules have to be flexible because this is a pickup game that neighborhood kids are going to throw together because they're bored with ring alivio or booties up or whatever they're playing.
Right. And there's a built-in audience of everybody sitting on the stoops yelling at you.
Yeah, the fire escapes are the mezzanine. The roof is the bleachers. I feel like it's all gone now. Like, Do the Right Thing was the last time I remember kind of seeing that kind of nostalgia for a community that was all out just seeing what was happening on the sidewalks.
Yeah, I guess that was the last time I saw it, too.
We'll get into that decline, but the game is simplified. You know, there's maybe only one or two strikes to get a batter out. I think generally, in most versions, you do run to the base, and you continue running the bases, and the fielders try to get the runner out by just chucking the Spalding at him or her. You have to decide ahead of time, you know, which obstacles of the field are foul versus, you know, if the ball goes on a roof, is that a out or a home run? If the ball breaks a window, is that an out or a windshield? If the ball lands in Mrs. Kriegstein's, goes through a window and lands under her couch, is that a foul ball? You know, what? And there were a lot of conventions about that, but.
You've got experience of making up games. Did you, you guys made up games. You're throwing bicycle tires around.
Kids always made up games.
Yeah.
We made a lot of just games that had a lot of running around. I think kids just have a lot of energy.
Yeah. We always played some version of either cops or war. And the rules were all made up for both those games.
I do think that is the appeal of stickball. That it has some kind of Calvin ball flexibility where, you know, everybody has the fun of making up the rules for that day based on how many players you have and what the field looks like, what the street looks like that morning.
Right. Because, yeah, you've got to incorporate parked cars.
Right. And stickball, you know, just kind of as a, but unlike me throwing an inner tube around or kids just playing some made up game of Steal the Bacon or Johnny on the Fly, a whole culture starts to build up around this just because baseball is so huge.
Right.
And in particular, it's big in New York. You know, New York has the Dodgers and the Giants and the Yankees. It's, you know, arguably the three most iconic teams are all playing within 10 miles of each other. And every kid just listens to baseball on the radio and thinks about their favorite players and collects all the cards.
Right. I mean, that's another, that's that world of comic books that you were talking about. That kind of feeling about baseball is a thing that I feel very nostalgic for that never really existed. I mean, you can cheer for the Mariners.
You and I are the right. You and I are the age where NFL and Super Bowl had already defeated baseball.
Yeah, that's right.
And it happened pretty quick.
That's right.
I mean, it didn't seem possible, and then suddenly it had already happened.
Reggie Jackson, you know, it was the fall of Pete Rose.
You think it was the fall of Pete Rose?
I think that's the end of baseball in America in terms of competing against.
I think baseball did fine. It just got superseded.
Oh, I see that. Yeah, that football just got so huge. And then they.
Terms of pace and intensity, it's just an easier sell.
They gamed up basketball at a certain point in the 80s.
And maybe the fact that it goes from radio to TV, this is a point somebody must have made, but baseball's a great radio sport. And,
right.
And the football's better on TV.
Yeah, because it's very hard to describe what's happening in football, whereas in baseball, you can
One thing happens at a time, and an announcer can tell you, and you hear sound effects that tell you what's happening.
Right, even if it's somebody hitting a board with another board.
So in the 50s and 60s, when baseball is at its, what we did not know was its dying peak, that really helped stickball. And in fact, you know, Joe Pepitone, the all-star Yankees first baseman of the early 60s, was a Brooklyn kid who had come out of stickball culture.
Oh, wow.
And so this is how the new generation of ball players would come up. A lot of them, you know, if they came up in, you know,
the
outskirts of town, maybe they can play on a diamond. But a lot of these kids that came from the five boroughs learned to play baseball from stickball. And it would go the other way as well. You know, Willie Mays grew up in Alabama, but when he started playing for the Giants, he would hang out with the kids and the teens in Harlem that were playing stickball, and he would learn how to hit breaking balls just playing stickball with kids. And, you know, he was arguably, you know, one of the most iconic athletes in America at the time.
So it was a pitcher's game, stickball.
I guess. I mean, it depends. Like, it depends on if you got room. You know, if you're pitching kind of underhand with kind of a sidearm lob and a bounce, I mean, maybe not. Maybe it does prepare you for all kinds of weird spins if it's coming off.
Oh yeah,
coming off concrete.
Because it would be a spin. It'd be a spin game. Yeah.
And Willie Mays, you know, to this day is a stickball legend because, you know, the biggest star in America was, you know, it'd be like LeBron just showing up at a city court after the game.
Right.
To play horse or one-on-one or something. Willie Mays was apparently a four-sewer hitter. You know, that was how you would measure power because there'd be a manhole every 100 feet or so.
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe more, 250 feet? I don't know. How far apart would sewers be? So anyway.
Pretty far, but I don't know if you could hit four of them if they were 250 50 feet.
He's got a rubber ball. So, you know, he got these Paul Bunyan-like tales of, I was there when Willie Mays hit a 5-sewer home run, you know? And as implied by that Harlem thing, there were neighborhood teams. New York was still heavily neighborhooded.
Right.
And ethnically divided. You know, there'd be an Irish neighborhood, an Italian one, and,
right.
and a Puerto Rican neighborhood. And often, you know, you would stay out of this turf, but the exception would be for a prearranged stickball game. You know, then the Puerto Rican kids could go into the Irish neighborhood, or the black kids could go into the Italian neighborhood. And
now we're talking about a Michael Jackson video.
That's exactly right. Except there were strict rules built around this. You know, like, once the game ends, you do have 1 minute to get the hell out of Jackson Heights or, you know, or wherever you are.
Yeah, sure.
There's a famous story about one rival team showing up in a different neighborhood, you know, maybe a Jewish team, and they're wearing black and gold uniforms. And everyone's like, what? Uniforms in stickball? And they're like, yeah, this is amazing. Like one of our best players put these together. This kid named Ralph Lifshitz, who became Ralph Lauren, who I guess got his start making stickball uniforms.
What, really?
Yeah, that's a real story. The New York Times has written a lot of R.I.P. stickball, sure, nostalgic R.I.P. stickball stories over the years. Have. So it's got there's a lot of great oral history in these pieces of people remembering, and they tell stories about. I mean, people once neighborhoods had teams, you did have a lot of. You know, sitting on the stoop culture of people who wanted to watch the games.
Right.
And that turned into people wanting to bet on the games.
Right.
So you'd have players and neighbors, you know, these are teenagers, a lot of them. A lot of them are betting 50, 60 bucks on the game, you know, stakes that would really be like, can I pay the rent this month?
Right, right.
Based on how my stickball team is doing.
But it really showed how much faith you had in your teens.
Right. You'd probably be like, well, we got, you know, this year, we got the best team.
We got Willie Mays.
We got 3-2 sewer hitters. Yeah, I don't know. Are you allowed to have a ringer like Willie Mays show up if there's actually money on the line? But there are cases of people calling in fire alarms when they were down late in the game and they had a lot of money on the game.
Oh.
Somebody calls in a fire alarm so that the... Because, you know, as you would imagine, there's a lot of tension in this informal game with neighbors. You know, some of them love the team. Some of them hate it. Some, you know, you'll try to block the street with garbage cans to keep, because cars would interrupt the game.
Yeah, of course. So cops, especially.
Yeah, cops will come. So you got to block the street with garbage cans, but then that's the kind of thing that'll attract the cops. The building superintendent's going to get mad at you if another window gets broken. So a lot of times they would come in and, you know, an angry cop or a building soup would come in and just take the Spalding ball and just take a knife and cut it in half.
Oh.
Or take your broom handle and drop it down a sewer grate.
Oh.
You know, end on through one of the holes.
I mean, that's going to be a problem when it rains, because then all the, you know, the trash is going to get backed up against the broom pole.
But it just seems like a lively kind of one. It seems like the embodiment of that Sesame Street, open the fire hydrant kind of culture that we all, you know, on some level like to imagine. It seems to be, you know, although people's mops were going missing and the cops were mad and some windshields would get broken, it does seem like kind of like an idyllic community thing.
Yeah, of a time. I mean, now I know enough people in Brooklyn to know that the kids aren't out blocking traffic and playing ball, but there's a lot more traffic too.
There's a list of things that led to the demise of stickball. I thought this would be a good omnibus because it is kind of a little bygone part of history that we have the last vestiges of third-hand memory of.
Yeah, right.
Like in 1985, by the time the Bronx had renamed Newman Avenue Stickball Avenue, just because it was a real stickball locus, the sport was already in sad decline.
Well, that's the thing. As soon as you name a street after it, it's all over.
It's easy to blame indoors being better, you know, yeah. Kids suddenly having cable TV and video games, you know, other things to compete with pickup baseball. And I'm sure that's part of it. But you also had, you know, as you imply, a two-income family is a place where there's no parent around to be like, you go play outside, I'll see you at dinner.
Right.
You know, and it becomes easier without a, you know, in a world of more latchkey kids to have more indoor kids as well.
Yeah.
You'd think you're going to have more kids roaming the streets, but I think in fact you just could get more kids watching game shows.
Right, because especially in a situation where you have multiple unsupervised kids, you have multiple houses you can cycle between.
Exactly. There's always somebody where somebody's home where nobody's home.
Yeah.
Air conditioning is cited as a contributing factor.
Interesting. Of course, because this was like, it's so hot, we can't even
inside. Let's get out of the apartment, you know? Whereas when it's no longer a tenement building in 1944, you know, when there's actual AC, indoor gets even better. Teachers start assigning more homework.
Oh, come on, so teachers.
There's less hours to just kill in the street.
Don't you even care about stickball?
And less neighbor, and less kind of neighborhood community togetherness. Once the neighborhood ceases to be the unit,
yeah, that
and
seems
it becomes more about the household.
Well, and ethnic diversity, probably.
Exactly.
If your neighborhood isn't all Dominican, then you don't have that same.
Right.
Yeah.
There's, but beyond those kind of, you know, social stratification kind of a thing, there's just the fact that kids started to play more organized sports, you know, more, more parents and schools and teachers and communities thought, what we need is
Ralph Lauren to make actual uniforms for the whole town.
Actual soccer leagues, you know, affluence rises and, you know, there's still plenty of poor kids in the Northeast, but maybe they can no longer afford these urban cores. You know, gentrification changes the makeup of who's going to these schools.
Right.
It changes the kid density of the neighborhood.
Oh, kid density.
And it means they can afford, you know, the rising affluence, they can actually afford gloves and equipment and mitts. And
so were there not school teams of the same kind at the time?
It seems like less so, you know?
That was more of a prep school universe.
Yeah,
right?
If you're going to PS 186, like, I mean, I'm sure there's a basketball coach and a volleyball coach, and but it seems like the real action is still on the streets.
Yeah, right.
And then, as we've already touched on, like, baseball no longer held its 1965 relevance for long. You know, the kids famously wanted to play football and then basketball, and basketball is much better suited to a
urban environment,
to tight inner city quarters.
And so there are now basketball courts all over New York.
You can, there's lots of hard top to play on. You don't need to repurpose a street.
Super hard to play football on the street in New York.
Yeah, I think that was more of a, I mean, that's more of an organized kind of Pop Warner thing where you're having to find a field. But right. You know, the kids who wanted to play a sport, I guess maybe there was a time when briefly, especially if you were, I don't know, maybe it's if you're one of these Irish or Italian kids moving to the suburbs, maybe that becomes football before it switches to basketball.
Yeah. A lot of them, you know, of course, went into tennis. No.
Like a single-digit number of these kids went into tennis, probably, and even fewer into golf.
Right.
An interesting factor is that traffic increased on a lot of these streets.
Yeah.
You know, in New York in 1950, there's plenty of neighborhoods where a car wouldn't come by for an hour.
Yes, sir.
Not really. That's not my experience with crosstown traffic.
No, even Manhattan. Even now when there are, you know, busy streets and not busy streets, may not surprise you to learn that all the people that don't want to be on a busy street cut over to the not busy street, and so there are no not busy streets.
Waze killed stickball.
They really did.
No, I think stickball was in decline long before then.
In L.A., Waze is a plague. And it's a plague to me because, you know, I used to just be like, well, I'm on Sepulveda. I guess I'm on here for a while. And if you're using Waze, it's like, no, turn here. All of a sudden, you're in some speed bump filled, traffic circle filled suburban.
It's funny that you mentioned Sepulveda because I have a weird street that my phone now directs me to turn off of. Off, you know, near LAX, if I'm going to return my rental car. And I now, you know, but I'm always in a parade of 6 to 8 other cars who are also using Google Maps.
Right.
And I'm sure the neighbors there hate it.
Yeah, it's bad. Because 10 years ago, nobody went down that street.
Yeah, there've actually been, we've probably talked about this on a different entry, but there have been legal battles between neighborhood groups and Waze saying, we control this data. We did not give you permission to advertise our street as a thoroughfare.
Oh, interesting.
And Google says, well, there's no such legal right. And that's when, I don't know, speed bumps tend, or, you know, other calming devices can go in.
Well, you saw the thing just now that it's been happening for a while, but it's kind of a news item right now where Palm Springs is making Airbnb really hard. It's like severely limiting.
Is Seattle starting to take steps too?
I don't know. I mean, New York did that draconian limitation. And I wonder why Uber and these MAP programs, why communities haven't done more to bring back stickball and eliminate all these tech bro efficiencies, tech bro pseudo efficiencies.
Well, stickball is not dead. You know, even while it was in decline, like in 1985, there was kind of a Bronx revival of it because you've still got the generation that grew up playing it who is now like around to be like, why aren't the kids playing stickball?
Hey, you know what?
What can we do?
We fought a war.
And they created the New York Emperor's Stickball League, which was largely an adult rec league, but it did have a youth division. But it, again, it's no longer, you know, kids pick up games by kids making up their own rules about where the foul poles are.
A stickball league.
This totally reminds me, by the way, of, because it's Fungo as well, of Dylan and his friends out in the San Juans. I think they found like some wiffle ball stuff at a... like a take it or leave it weekend event at the dump at the recycling center.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, oh boy, wiffle ball. And then every time since then, I've seen him out there trying to pace off how to turn our backyard into the perfect wiffle ball diamond.
Your backyard.
Yeah. Where should the diamonds be?
Your backyard has zero wiffle ball space.
This is our place in the San Juans.
Oh, I see. Yeah. That's got more space.
It does have more space, but also has like a blackberry covered bluff, like leading down to Puget Sound. And
yeah, so, it's like an obstacle course baseball game where there's the dangerous hazards.
But it really is like my son and his friends figuring out stickball. Like, okay, first base is going to be there.
Right.
If it goes in the blackberries, that's foul.
We're going to throw a hat down and that's that's third base.
And he's really like, he's pacing stuff off. He's looking at Google Maps imagery of the backyard, trying to figure out like where, you know, where the outfield should be.
That's funny. Did he have any baseball experience? Did you guys ever?
Weirdly, he and his friends play a ton of baseball, like just pick up games on unused Seattle diamonds, which during the rainy parts of the year is all of them.
Yeah, right.
He and his friends weirdly all got into Major League Baseball at the same time.
But they actually go out and hit the ball around or toss the ball
around. And they go play in the dark of winter.
Boy, I support that. USA America.
Well, that's kind of what this stickball league in the Bronx is doing, you know, because I don't know if you remember this 90s era, you know, when crime peaked in the 90s and Clinton was suddenly on the ball for an anti-crime bill, a lot of money started going into like midnight basketball. Right? Uh-huh. Do you remember this?
Uh-huh.
Like if the kids were just doing sports,
Yeah. They
wouldn't be doing carjacking. And so, you know, all these, whatever the worst crack decimated neighborhoods got targeted for all this money. And it became kind of a conservative talking point. Like Rush Limbaugh would be like, and now your tax dollars are going to play midnight basketball, you know, some super racist rant, midnight basketball in Watts.
Right.
You know, like, can you think of a bigger waste of money than playing basketball at night?
When it could be going to subsidize soybean farmers.
An Exxon. And I think you're going to be shocked to hear this. I think Rush was wrong. There is now data showing that, like, property crime did fall fastest. You know, crime fell everywhere after that, whatever that lead gas boom was. But it fell fastest in neighborhoods that had adopted some of these sports programs. And like, you know, there were all these rosy visions of like, people would be like, yeah, you know, you'd think they were tough kids and you get 300 of them together. Like, oh, what's going to go down? And then everybody would just get super into the game and
Right. Nobody
would be swearing. Everybody would be playing, you know, you wouldn't hear a single curse word. The kids would just be happily playing pick up basketball and stickball and whatnot.
But then the game would be over and you'd have 1 minute to get out.
Exactly. 1 minute to get home.
It's funny because in the rest of the world, soccer performs this role and you can really play soccer anywhere. You can play soccer in a closet.
And they do play on these little tiny courts where the ball can carom off the off the walls.
But, you know, you can just stand there and bounce a ball, just play hacky sack basically and spend all day doing that with a soccer ball.
Every vacant lot in the non-American world.
But almost all American sports require at least an acre, with 15-foot tall fences.
It's because we had the frontier, you know? Like, we were never, we dreamed loftily. That's why George Will is always waxing on about the endless grass of the outfield.
Right.
Because that's eminent domain, or not eminent domain, that's manifest destiny.
But even... you know, the Native American games, they all were like field games.
Right.
And
yeah. I mean, the Choctaw, you know, lacrosse is based on Choctaw stickball, which is a big field.
But even that weird Aztec game where they throw super hard rubber balls at each other, I mean, that was an infrastructure intensive game.
You did need, I think that one did have a, some kind of a court, right?
It did.
It had basketball like standards. So in a midnight basketball kind of way, stickball has to some degree bounced back. No pun intended.
Come on.
Like a Spalding ball. I think the Spalding factory shut down, but some stickball league in Florida bought the last 1,500 rubber balls to play stickball with, you know, for the rest of, you know, like Elaine Bennis hoarding contraceptive sponges.
Are you saying that Spalding doesn't make balls anymore?
They don't at their, you know, Paterson, New Jersey factory where they used to.
It always seemed that handballs would work just as well. They make handballs.
I think they use, I think you can use anything. You can use tennis balls, I think, and a game of stickball works just fine. That's the beauty of stickball, John. Yeah. It's like, it's rough and tumble American Yankee ingenuity.
The beauty of stickball.
And maybe it's coming back.
And that concludes entry 1225.MK0608. Certificate number 13472. In the omnibus. Futureling, social media died an even worse death than stickball. And as far as I can tell, the people over there on Mastodon and what are the other ones?
Blue Sky.
Well, Threads. There's a third one, Threads. Those folks are all like the stickball reunion societies, people that remember an ancient time when it was fun to write quips at each other.
Except they have Eddie Pepitone instead of Joe Pepitone. That's the only difference.
So you're out there trying to make those things work, but let me tell you, it is a lost cause. Let it die. Let it die.
The NBA took over. What is the NBA in this scenario? Substack?
I don't know. Twitter. I mean, it's bad guy X. But no, all those tech guys and all that tech stuff that was meant to bring us together, it all just drives us apart. So my suggestion is that you go back to message boards.
Go sit on your stoop and yell at your neighbors.
That's what it is.
Hey, Mrs. Morelli.
Hey.
How's Jake?
Hey. A lot of that. Where's the hey?
Listen to Samuel L. Jackson, who is probably DJing from the corner, like spinning some amazing like soul tracks.
Yeah, fellow DJ daddies.
So it's like the equivalent of touch grass, but there's no grass. It's like touch asphalt.
Well, you know, one of the problems, the problem is an eye for an eye leaves everybody blind. But the real problem is that contemporary architecture is based around the garage in the front, and there is no stoop. There was a whole period in the 90s where we were realizing all the new construction in Seattle was basically fortified. There wasn't any place where you could just sit on the steps out in front of your front door.
Almost by design.
By design.
Right? Like,
absolutely.
I want to feel like my house is a little fort where I don't need to see my neighbors, right?
Yeah, exactly. You drive in, the garage door shuts behind you, you never open the front door. Because only solicitors would come. It was a whole sucky thing.
Remember the time when they would build those, you know, whatever McMansion with a terrible roofline, but also have a little token living room right inside? Because you wouldn't actually ever socialize there.
No.
You've got a TV elsewhere. But you have to have this little show, like a model apartment right by your front door, such that if anybody ever did come in your front door, you would have a little place to put them without letting them get into the real house, like an airlock.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think that's still true. I mean, if you walk into your house, it's very welcoming. But you have to go past two bathrooms, your office.
Two bathrooms? There's like two bathrooms.
A giant closet.
There's a little powder room down there.
But then, yeah, it opens up. It's one of these kitchen, dining room, living room, open plan thing.
Yeah, I feel like most houses now have that open plan thing. But there's the suburban kind that has that. But there's also a little parlor by the door.
Yeah, parlor.
That's nobody ever goes there, and the magazines are dusty.
Yeah. Well, if you are a senior love daddy that does not want to be on social media but still wants to stay in touch with us, you can Gmail us @gmail.com, which is probably tracing our locations and sending people through our living rooms.
Is Gmail a verb?
Yeah, you can Gmail us at the Gmail.
Send us a Gmail. Compose and send a Gmail.
If that's not true already, that seems like an old person thing, but if that's not true already, let me coin it today. You can Gmail us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com.
I think the old person thing is to Hotmail us.
Don't Hotmail
us. Make sure you Hotmail us.
The thing is, I don't even need to say gmail.com. I can just say Gmail us at theomnibusproject.
It's a little confusing, but okay.
No, that's way better.
It's a little out of order.
Because the whole like @domadabubadaboo, just say Gmail us.
You saved time.
Just say Gmail
me. But at what cost?
At what cost?
Gmail me, bro.
Gmail me.
What if we started saying that? Like, do you want to have lunch like next week? Yeah, Gmail me, bro.
Gmail
like,
me, bro.
Over my shoulder. Yeah. Gmail me, bro.
You can mail us. And why does it have to be mail? Why can't it be, why does it have to be gendered?
You could female us, you could, or non-binary
us at the U.S. non-binary, which is not what it's called, because male has a different root than male.
Correct.
You can mail us at P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155. Mail us, bro.
Here's a little mystery thing that came in the mail. From what I can tell, it was ordered directly from Amazon, and it doesn't have a little gift receipt, so I cannot thank the futureling.
It was sent to us.
I cannot thank the futureling who sent us 72 cinnamon coffee cake flavored Fiber One bars.
Whoa, that's a mega pack of 18 bars, but they're low calorie.
just 70 calories and only 5 grams of net carbs in every delicious frosted cinnamon coffee cake soft baked bar.
How many grams of added sugar? Look at the that's the telltale hand.
Oh, these have non-sugar things.
Oh, okay.
They have some chicory and erythritol.
Stevia. And
in there to make you.
Abrevia.
Sorbitol.
Sure, that's the stuff.
So there's really hardly any sugar. 2 grams.
2 grams of added sugar.
In a bar.
I can taste all the fake sugars, though. My tongue just recoils at it.
I only like them in soda.
Only Dr. Pepper that you like. Let's be honest.
Yeah, it's better. But I don't mind them in soda, but boy, if you try to give me a dessert that tastes like
sorbitol,
monk fruit, no thank you.
Monk
fruit for the monks. That's remember when we used to say that?
I do. That was a famous saying from the 50s.
What do you think we said on the show that led someone to send us 72 Fiber One bars?
I said that probably that I was trying to live a zero sugar life, but I didn't know what to do. For my daughter, because she was like a child and she wanted sweets. And so I think we're getting people saying, I've got the solution to you.
This worked for somebody. There's somebody out there whose sweet tooth was satisfied by these delicious cinnamon coffee cake Fiber One bars.
My daughter does seem at least mollified by fake sugar. She's grown up in a world where...
That happened to me.
Stevia's in things.
I grew up on Diet Coke, and so to me, Diet Coke is what soda tastes like.
Wow.
I'm not like, this is aspartame.
I grew up drinking Tab because my dad drank Tab, and I never once was fooled.
Well, it's
because Coke is 1,000 times better than Tab.
Well, it's because saccharin has that aftertaste. Blech. You needed to grow up in a post-Nutrasweet world.
But because I drank so much saccharin, I can stand right next to a nuclear reactor and not get irritated at all. My skin is made out of 10% saccharin.
That's what cyclamates were for.
Yeah.
You're bomb-proof.
Go look for other futurelings where they can tell you all about themselves, and you can tell them about you, and then you can talk about mail trucks.
Somebody solve the mystery of who sent us the Fiber One bars.
That too. You can email us at, or you can Gmail us at the Omnibus Project. And then let me encourage you to go to patreon.com/omnibusproject and Patreon us, bro.
Gmail us some money.
Yeah, just send us a little bit of money. Sign up, first of all, for Patreon, then contribute a little money, and all of a sudden a whole world will open up to you.
Over 50 bonus episodes will be immediately available.
It's what's called a paywall. And on the other side of the paywall, it's like the world goes from black and white to color. And you don't even know it's there because you haven't made that small contribution to get through the gilded gates and into the Disneyland of the Omnibus Patreon.
I don't like the metaphor of how we have built a wall to keep out the poor people.
No. It's not that. Disneyland welcomes everybody, and so
if they
do
have
we.
$139 a day.
Well, sure, but, you know, when you go to Disneyland, you see, like it is the whole breadth of humanity, and I don't know how they manage it. There must be scholarships. Are there scholarships to Disneyland?
Yes. You're like, our family reunion cannot be at a sad city park again. We need
Disneyland.
40 people to go to Disneyland.
Well, compared to Disneyland, being inside the Omnibus fantasy world is incredibly cheap. It is a tiny, tiny fraction of the cost of going to Disneyland. And it's months of entertainment.
It's cheaper and more educational than Disneyland. Basically, it's Epcot.
Is Epcot cheaper?
I have no idea.
I've never been of the Florida parks because I boycott Florida just like I boycott South Africa. Although I don't anymore, either thing. I never did. Let's be honest.
that sentence was a roller coaster.
That's patreon.com/omnibusproject.
Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. If the worst comes soon, though, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But, if providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.